As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Football League show. Carol singing in South Wales. Posh v Barnsley was so bad someone turned the lights off. Danny Cowley provides shocking revelations about Steve Evans. And Forest Green rail against their principles by stepping on the gas. This is the Totally Football League show in association with Paddy Power. Welcome in once again then to our twice weekly chat about all things EFL. Joining me, Matt Davis Adams, are Adrian Clark.
Hiya.
Hiya, and Sam Parkin.
Hello, Matt.
Hello, Sam. And also with us today, the Athletic's EFL expert, Nancy Frostick. Hi, Nancy.
Hiya.
You've got a wide-ranging brief, Nancy, for the Athletic. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been working on lately and why people should be signing up to go and read it?
Yeah, it's been busy. It's always busy. But I spoke to Beth Lumsden of Oxford United Women on Saturday, I think it was. I spoke to her because she's been training with the men's first team with Carl Robinson, which is pretty cool, actually, and a bit unusual. And she said that basically come about because she was in the gym at the training ground, bumped into Carl, and he was asking her how it's going. And they're part-time, the women's team in the National League South. And she said she just wanted a bit more contact time, and he basically just said, come down to our sessions. So it's worth checking that out because she's got some really good insight about how she settled in and a few extra bits going on at Oxford, and they're in the sort of in the mix for promotion with Southampton and Ipswich. So yeah, tough league that one.
Excellent. Right, there were plenty of goings on in the Championship this weekend. We'll reflect on all of those next.
It's the Paddy Power supporters support line, and we're speaking to Spurs fan Mark.
Yeah, it's Harry Kane. He's absolutely banging him in for England, but then he's playing for us and, well, there won't be four goals a game.
Yeah, true, but he also won't be playing against countries whose entire population wouldn't fill the stadium. Being a football fan isn't always rewarding, but if it's rewards you're after, then try Paddy Power's Bet Builder offer. Get money back as a free bet if one leg of your Bet Builder lets you down. Paddy Power. Pretty much online Bet Builder bets only. Min odds 1 to 5 per leg. Min 4 plus legs. Max free bet £10 per day. Excludes enhanced match odds. Must have previously deposited to avail. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Championship headlines. Not a great weekend for the promotion chasers. Blackburn were the only team who started the weekend in the top half to win. Bournemouth failed to capitalise on Fulham's stumble, with both the top two drawing. After they all found the net last weekend, none of Mitro, Solanke, BBD or Pirro scored this time around. Better news for Chris Wilder. He got his first win as Borough boss. Ditto Paul Hecking bottom second time around at Sheffield United. Whilst at the bottom, Cardiff, Hull and Reading all won to increase the gap between they and the bottom three. We're going to start, as is often the case this season, with Bournemouth. We don't usually talk about them chucking away points, though, which is what happened here as they let a two-goal lead slip against a dogged Coventry. Adrian, Scott Parker said he was devastated for his players who'd only had a few days to learn a new system for this game. It struck me as a slightly strange comment, but they shot themselves in the foot here, didn't they?
I agree. I'm glad you brought that up. I thought that Scott Parker's quotes after the game were a bit over-emotional, talking about devastation. And also saying that they had 15 minutes to go through the new game plan and the new system on the training ground. I mean, you can always make more than 15 minutes. So that strikes me as being nonsensical, really. Don't know if he was clutching. Obviously, he was upset because they'd thrown away a great position, 2-0 up. Red card changes everything. And I guess the fact that most of his first choice defence were missing didn't help matters. I think Smith, Zamora, Cahill, Kelly, all out at the moment. So no doubt frustrated with that and what happened in the game. So yeah, look, disappointment for them. He went to that new system and it was working. 3-4-2-1 was the shape. Wasn't a great game, but they were in control of it. But everything fell apart when Lerma got sent off. And yeah, it's just that one lapse, isn't it? A poor touch. Little bit stitched up by Jack Stacey's pass towards him, which was sort of hip high, wasn't it? Not easy to control. But from that moment on, Coventry smelt blood and fair play to them.
Interesting to see how they respond to this, Nancy, I think, Bournemouth, because Scott Parker's kind of been showered with praise for most of this season. But the comments that we've spoken about after this game, and just looking at it, they haven't won in three games and they've only won one of their last five. So it's a bit of a wobble, and they've got Fulham, Blackburn and revitalised Middlesbrough as their next three games.
Yeah, they were going so well. And then obviously, well, you never really expect a team to go a whole season unbeaten in the Championship. But, you know, you did wonder how long it was going to be before anyone sort of, really took anything off them. And then obviously that's happened. I think the surprise one maybe was Derby, but then they're sort of, I don't know, being plucky in just about every game that they can and, you know, really going at everyone. But yeah, the way that this result just kind of slipped away from them, it's that daft football term, isn't it, like 2-0 being a dangerous dangerous score or a dangerous lead. But yeah, it was just, I suppose that the key thing then will be just them keeping control of the situation, control of their emotions, because like Adrian's just said, that there's not really any need to react in that way to this result. You know, Coventry have not laid down in any game this season. They've pretty much come back if they've been a goal down or something, that, you know, they're going to fight to the end, and that's what they are. But yeah, one to keep an eye on. I think it'll be about how they manage the next couple of games, which won't be easy.
Before you ask me about Coventry, Matt, can I just disagree with Clarkey for the first time this season?
As long as you keep it friendly and it doesn't go all Carragher and Keane.
Well, I certainly know what the attention span of footballers is. Clarkey does as well. I'm sure Nancy does, considering the amount she interviews. Depends when this injury occurred to Gary Cahill on the Friday. If it's at 12:30, you know, with the last kick of the ball, I have sympathy for Bournemouth. If he's had to change his system that late in the day. However, the counter-argument is he did have Rossi, young centre-half, on the bench, who has done quite well when he's played. So he could have gone for his usual system, his tried and tested system, had he had a little bit more trust in the players that were available. So, yeah, it's happened to me before, and it's not ideal, is it? But, Lerma playing centre-half is a bit weird.
Yeah. It's in that situation, you lose your centre-half at the last minute. Is it not counterproductive to then change everything that you'd pre-planned before and not just slot in a player into the system and shape that you were going to use anyway? Is that not?
Yeah. That was my second point, really. But we don't know the circumstances. You don't know the form of the younger player. He hasn't. The defence hasn't been brilliant recently. I think we spoke about it on the last podcast, missing, you know, a number of players, especially the two left-sided ones. So I think maybe he's just probably wanting to go with the added experience of Lerma, which has backfired.
Give some love to Coventry while you're there then, Sam. I think we can all agree that Todd Kane probably didn't mean to score with that shot.
Now Kane is just going to float it in. It's gone all the way in! In the fifth minute of stoppage time, Todd Kane's first Coventry City goal, and Mark Robbins' side never know when they're beaten. They've come back again.
But yeah, one defeat in seven for them now, and it's one of those, isn't it? Because they got the two late goals here, everything's rosy in the garden, whereas had they not done that, we'd have been saying, well, they've drawn the last two 0-0 before then, maybe they're on the slide instead. Hey, look, one defeat in seven. Aren't they great?
Yeah, and Mark Robbins was magnanimous in the... in that Bournemouth a better side, clearly, until the sending off. And Nancy just made the point, though, it's not a fluke because that's the sixth time they've come from a deficit to take points. What is a fluke though is the equalising goal, and I don't think enough been made of that. I've got a Coventry supporting friend who is giving jip to QPR supporters who have told him, oh, Todd Kane's no good, he's been useless for us, blah, blah, blah. Well, Todd Kane isn't useless, but I'm not letting you have this as his moment, his second coming, because this is a fluke. It's caught the wind and it's flown into the top corner. But again, another player that Adi Vivash knows really well. And if anyone can get the best out of an ex-Chelsea Academy starlet, it's Adi. So, yeah, this is a really good Coventry team. And I thought, in terms of the tactical setup, he went to the box midfield. He does it for the big away games, did it at Sheffield United and got a point. And it looked like it wasn't going to have its day, but made the change to go to two strikers quite early. And obviously they got great firepower and got a great point.
Great point for them. But I think the game of the day was in South Wales, where Swansea and Reading shared five goals, but the Royals kept the points all to themselves. Swansea failed to heed the old adage that you're at your most vulnerable once you've scored. Nancy, they'll really be kicking themselves, won't they? We'll give Reading some praise shortly. But for Swansea to concede a minute after scoring twice is unforgivable, really.
Yeah, it's just... Obviously, we know the type of football they're going to play under Russell Martin, and you expect that, but it's kind of... They've got to get those basics right, and they got them so wrong so quickly after scoring both those goals. It was just... They had 511 passes more than Reading or something, which is mad, but like... If you're overplaying it and, you know, you're just giving them those opportunities, they've not scored in for a long time, Danny Drinkwater and Andy Carroll, but they're still quality players and they always have been. So, you know, you are going to get punished. And Tom Daley-Bashiri had a great game as well. But yeah, it's just, I think they will be kicking themselves just because of the nature of it, the way that they kind of slipped up so quickly after taking the lead. You've got to stay switched on, haven't you?
Clucky, that Andy Carroll goal was genuinely brilliant, I thought. One of the goals of the weekend. Sensational. And I don't know where he pulled it from, because it's not the kind of goal you would associate with Andy Carroll.
No. And where's he been training all this time? He's been on his own, hasn't he? I'm sure that he's got access to some kind of personal trainer or whatever, but he's been clubless for so long. So the fundamental basics of playing football can get very rusty, can't they? And there's nothing rusty about that goal, was there? The touch... The pace to get away from the defence. I mean, Russell Martin might be looking at his back three and thinking, right, might need to add a little bit more speed into that rear guard because they couldn't keep up with him. And then good composure with the finish and a great celebration as well. He'd sort of had time to plan out what he was going to do. And at least he came up with something a bit different, didn't he? So, yeah, great moment for Andy Carroll. And if he can stay fit... That's a massive if, we all know that. But if he can, then he gives Reading such a different outlet, doesn't he, in terms of they can go longer and those crosses that they put in the box from the likes of Jari and Swift, etc., that they've got a real threat in there. So yeah, one wonderful goal for him, wonderful moment, and yeah, wish him well moving forwards.
He went off injured, but it seems it's not that serious. Sam, I'll let you say something sensible and insightful about the game shortly. But first of all, tweet of the week. I think this is absolutely vintage from Royals midfielder Tom Daley-Bashiri. What a great team performance, boat emoji. And fans were unreal, exclamation mark. We go again at Reading FC, blue heart emoji. I mean, there's a rogue boat emoji in there. But other than that, that is straight from page one of the footballer's Twitter textbook, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not good enough. And it's another player who's had the best game of his season. And he's gone straight on his blower and he's produced that. It's a mess.
Yeah, but there was a boat celebration. It's a boat themed celebration,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, true. In line with the poo last week. I can't remember who did the poo emoji, but the boat, you do get bonus points for a boat. But I want to see it when they lose 2-0 at home to Barnsley. You know, I want to see something. and then I can only judge him then.
Okay, fair enough. Have you been impressed with Reading and how they've responded after the points deduction? This feels like a big win for them and just proof that they're not letting it get them down or send them down even.
I kind of do like Reading, and that's probably a bit controversial because I think that Paunovic's position as manager is much debated by the supporters right now. Even kind of I think the majority will be behind him obviously after this result, but I don't think the natives are sure. I thought this was a much better performance with the aforementioned Daley-Bashiri and Halilovic wider, higher, bit more thrust about them. It's a bit of a pass with no purpose that goes on about Reading at times. So I thought this was better. And you saw that with the goals. John Swift, again, not known for his aggression and closing people, but he was the catalyst for, I think, a couple of the goals. And just having a look yesterday, it looked like Danny Drinkwater was playing higher up, which obviously led to the goal, the winning goal as it was. He looked to be in an advanced position in comparison to Josh Laurent, who I'm sure he normally plays alongside, had double the touches of Laurent in the opposition's half. So normally a 4-2-3-1, looked like there was a little tinker at the weekend, and it's got them a great result. And do you know what? I'm thrilled about the older players that he signed, because it's sad, isn't it, when you see people like Drinkwater and Carroll and stuff on the scrap heap. And you know, all of them are doing really well. Even Baba Rahman had a great game by all accounts. So it'd be great if those guys can turn their careers around. Drinkwater especially, because, you know, that's been a real fall from grace.
Yeah, I'm with you completely on that. It's such a high winning the title and being brilliant in that season for Leicester. And then his career fell off a cliff. It was weird, really, wasn't it? That's what you get, I suppose, if you join Chelsea. But there you go, we won't go there.
I was just thinking, he's got 130,000 reasons every week to not feel too bad about it. Let's not have too much sympathy.
On Sam's point about his positioning, I think it's clever from Paunovic. I really do, because he accepted that Swansea would have all the ball. He was like, we're not going to pass the ball this game. We're not going to even try to. Our framework, our tactical game plan is all about squeezing them in the areas where we want to win the ball back, and that is obviously around the halfway line and just beyond. And I think by stepping up that midfielder to go and join and hunt alongside the attacking midfielders and the front men, it created that extra pressure where they got those two goals from turnovers, didn't they, Reddy? So I think it was an excellent tactical performance from Paunovic and a really aggressive one from his players. And yeah, it shows that they've got that other side to their makeup too.
How about Blackburn, eh? Since that home humiliation by Fulham, they've won 3 of 4, drawing the other. Their latest success came against Stoke in the Potteries. It lifted Rovers up to the giddy heights of fourth. Here's what Tony Mowbray had to say on that 7-0 defeat. I was brought up on a council estate in a steel town, and when somebody punches you in the face, you have to fight back. Bit needlessly aggressive, but you take his point, Nancy. He's managed to get his team fighting back.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I don't know what the response is to being punched in the face, what the like adequate analogy is for that. But yeah, we talked about Bournemouth there and maybe Stoke are in a similar position to a slightly different extent with, you know, 2 defeats in a row now. But that's how you respond, isn't it? That's, you know, I mean, 7-0's pretty serious hammering, and then it's like it's never happened. They've, you know, bounced back and back up to fourth now. And yeah, I mean, whatever he said to him, and I'm sure there was a few maybe choice words a bit stronger than that quote, it's clearly worked. And it was a great strike as well from as Kadra, wasn't it? He's on loan from Brighton, so I thought that was a properly clinical finish, that as well.
Sam, have they got the staying power to stick where they are? And does that depend on reports that we're seeing this morning that Ben Brereton-Diaz is being linked with Southampton and Sevilla in January at a cost of £20 million?
Yeah, 100%. I think I said it the last time we discussed them. Yeah, there's speculation about a number of their players, because rightly so, because a lot of them have come through the system there. By all accounts, Buckley was incredible at the weekend, both sides of the game as well, breaking up play, but real poise with it. You know, players you don't hear spoken about a lot, Travis, Rothwell, Wharton's having an incredible time at the moment. But yeah, Brereton is the main one in that. And I think it shows how far they've come, that this should have been more convincing at the weekend. They said it was a big game because they're two teams that could potentially crash the playoffs this year. And I think Blackburn at the moment showed at the weekend that they got more than Stoke. Really poor conditions, poor game, but, you know, more shots, looked more threatening throughout. And, you know, if the fan response is anything to go by, Stoke fans bitterly disappointed with that display. So, yeah, on and up for Blackburn.
But Stoke, Clarkey, I mean, they're like an advert for the unpredictability of the Championship, aren't they, at the moment? Lost three in a row, drew one, won three in a row. Now they've lost two in a row. There's not much consistency about that.
There isn't, but then they're decimated, aren't they? They've got so many good players that are either injured or suspended at the moment that they're bound to be vulnerable, I think, in a lot of areas. They really are down to the bare bones. Yeah, they got outran, didn't they, by Blackburn. They kept surging through the middle. We've talked about it before with Sam and I, with the central midfield. In this example, it was Vrančić and Romain Sawyers alongside each other. And it's a midfield that's considerably better with the ball than without it. And they were just striding through holes inside that engine room. By all accounts, did you see this about Romain Sawyers got named sponsor's man of the match, and the entire stadium just jeered as loudly as they could in response to it. I mean, it's not ideal, is it? I mean, having played for Southend United when we were having some really bad times, and it's obligatory to sort of hand out a man of the match. It has happened, probably to me and to teammates, where you know, you're just going to get battered because of the state of play, but. Yeah,
there's only one thing worse than that.
Yeah, go on.
Clarkey, that's the ironic cheers when your number goes up as a substitute.
Yeah.
That's the only thing worse.
It's not nice. It really isn't. Yeah, that may have happened. but yeah, it's not cool. But Stoke fans overreacting? I think they are. I don't know. I mean, it was a horrible day. It was really, really windy. It's never going to be pretty. They're up against a rejuvenated Rovers team. They're decimated by injuries, as I've explained. I think I can forgive Stoke this performance. I think the fans should maybe just back off a little bit. So we'll see. I'm sure they'll be back.
Perhaps a nice illustration of modern day Britain that you had people booing, voting Remain. Just kind of sums up where we are, doesn't it, I suppose. On Sunday, Paul Heckingbottom got his second spell of the year in charge of Sheffield United, underway with a 2-0 win over Bristol City. Joining us to tell us more is The Athletic's sharpest blade, Richard Sutcliffe. Richard, you're known as Sooty, so that must mean that Nancy Sweep, if she's the Wednesday half of the divide. You've written a piece for The Athletic today about how things went for Paul Heckingbottom and what you noticed from that game. Can you give us a brief summary?
Yeah, it's a little bit more adventurous, possibly, on the ball than they were under Jokanović, which, you know, obviously a surprise, you bearing in mind how his Fulham and Watford teams play. They just got the ball forward a bit earlier, got the wing-backs forward as well, which was more of a feature than it had been under Jokanović, and got the ball in the area, because they'd been one of the accusations against Sheffield United in the last few weeks, that they'd been quite boring to watch, which I do see how some people were suggesting that.
We, the outsiders, were pretty shocked at Jokanović getting the boot. Were you?
I wasn't, because I'd heard that there were rumblings that changes were afoot. I still think it's a nonsensical decision, if I'm honest. You bring a guy in on, you know, on a big contract, because obviously your CV he's got, it warrants that. You bring him in and then you don't really back him with the money to actually turn it into the team that he wants. You know, every manager needs two transfer windows minimum for me to get his own side. And I think we all thought this squad that came down out of the Premier League, it had so much Championship pedigree that it would, you know, it'd be quite, if you got it, just turn it round and it would have, it'd be sort of fit for purpose in terms of going straight back up. But it's not a squad that's really ready for that. I think there's too many players have gone down the other side of the hill in terms of their peak years, really. And you know, he wanted a couple of wingers, which there's no wingers in the club because that's not how Chris Wilder played. And he wanted a holding midfielder in January. And reading between the lines, I don't think the club have got the money to bring those players in. Hence why it's now going to be sticking to what they've got and trying to utilise a bit more youth under Paul Heckingbottom.
So that would explain then why they appointed Heckingbottom and gave him such a long contract, because he will just kind of happily work with what he's given rather than ask for some money to spend.
That's it. You know, we had again, nonsensical comment at the press conference last Thursday where it was said that Paul won't necessarily be judged on what happens on a Saturday afternoon, which has just caused utter ridicule in Sheffield. But it sort of gives you an insight into what people are thinking in terms of the board, because They want to see United World incorporated more. They want to see youth brought through, whereas, you know, this is a club that has the biggest gates in the Championship. There's expectations and demands that go with that, and finishing 18th in a season, but you bring a few youth players through, I'm afraid that won't cut it.
No, I completely agree with you. I just think it's crazy as well to dish out a six-year deal. How many managers last 6 years? It's foolish in my opinion. And this United World business, can you just explain it a little more? Because for me, from the outside looking in, the other clubs may benefit from taking some of Sheffield United's younger players on loan, Châteauroux, Beerschot, a couple of clubs around the world as well. But what are they going to get out of it at Bramall Lane? And I don't see, with all due respect, I don't see those clubs producing the next generation of talent that we're going to see out there in the Championship.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Obviously, it's Prince Abdullah's set up and he's got five clubs. You know, he's got one who are bottom of the Belgian division, a French side who are now in Division 3, who are fifth, and the other two in India and Dubai, who are so far off the standard for even the Championship that they're not on the radar. And so far, it does seem it's all geared towards Beerschot because the Sheffield United players are going out there. Femi Siriki, who made his debut in the Premier League last year, really good attacking right-back, right-wing-back. He went out there and he's played something like 6 minutes and he's already back in Sheffield, even though he can't play until January because it just wasn't working for him. And, it's, you know, we see a lot of these, you know, it works at Man City's level. And I like the concept, you know, because if you've not got, as Sheffield United have shown, they've gone up and they've done exactly what a lot of teams do. Huddersfield Town, another team from Yorkshire. You spend 70, 80, 90 million pounds on transfers. You hang around for a year in the Premier League and then gravity brings you down. And you go down after this boom and bust with not a penny left, really, and it's all siphoned off into players' pockets or agents' pockets. So you need a new approach, but I don't think bringing players in, you know, from, with all due respect, India, Dubai, and the second tier of Belgium or the third division, even though it's a very good academy at Châteauroux, there's some fantastic talent coming through. I don't think it's going to cut it. And like I say, I like the concept, but I think it works at Man City's level where they can buy the very best clubs and maybe even Leicester and Chelsea obviously have feeder clubs over the years, but I'm yet to be convinced by this. And it's a long-term project, we keep getting told, which is sort of 5, 6, 10 years down the line. But they've gone all in now after a year. So it's all the, you know, we're on a roulette table and we've moved everything off doing it, you know, doing sort of 10% that way and 90% this way. It's all in on United World and I think that's a risk if I'm being honest.
Richard, every time we speak about Sheffield United on the pitch this season, it seems to always be about the forward players. They've got a load of options, but no one's really pulled up trees so far. How impressive was Rian Brewster yesterday? Could that be a turning point for him? And who are the guys to potentially fire them up the table and get them close to those playoffs?
Yeah, well, Rian's the one that you everyone's desperate for it to work for him because, If I'm honest, it was a strange signing in the fact that he came in and you watch the goals he scored for Swansea and the goals he scored for Liverpool and England in the under-17s or in the World Cup, and they're all about getting the ball into the box first time and he just cracks it first time without really thinking, bit of a predator. And yet Sheffield United under Chris Wilder were all about building overloads out wide in personnel and only then do you get the ball into the box, which that's not how he worked. That continued under Slav, if I'm honest. Though the last three games, they've started to be a bit more direct and got the ball in the box. He got a belting goal from a first-time cross at Blackburn. He ran the channels, which was the big thing that I noticed at Reading, because as much as Sheffield United have not been playing for him, he hasn't helped himself either. That he's just basically waiting for somebody to give him a chance, whereas they need him to run the channels. Like Billy Sharp, when he's playing up front on his own, he does everything you expect of that sort of striker. And Billy's got, I think it's 5 goals and 6 assists this season, so he's been the standout striker. But I do think if Sheffield United are going to do anything this season, it will be by getting a tune out of Rian Brewster. And there's been hope, you know, there's been signs over these last three games, much more than over the previous 15 months. But then typical of the way it's gone for him, you know, he came off with a hamstring injury yesterday. So we're waiting to find out how bad that is. But it would be typical if he's finally started showing a bit. And like I say, a cracking goal against Blackburn, a really good turn and finish yesterday. And then to get an injury like that would just about sum up his time at Sheffield United.
Poor Ian. Richard, thank you. That was brilliant. Hopefully there'll be more to cheer for Sheffield United in the second half of the season. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Richard Sutcliffe there. Read him only in The Athletic and grab a third off a subscription by heading to theathletic.com/league show. Right, let's get some odds courtesy of Paddy Power and producer Abby. Abby, what's the weekend's championship results done to the outright markets, please?
Well, interestingly, I'm looking at the top six finish and you can't bet on Fulham, Bournemouth or West Brom to finish in the top six. And Coventry, Stoke and QPR are all at the same odds. They're all 11 to 10. So in a way, it's kind of sorted. But if we look a bit further down, we've got Blackburn at 9 to 5, as are Sheffield United. Swansea are 7 to 2. And if we scroll all the way down to Forest, that's 5 to 1 to finish in the top six.
Just so unnecessary, isn't it? Seems a bit strange that Blackburn and Sheffield United are the same price to get promoted, but there we go, what do I know? Thanks, Abby. Sort of thanks. Sort of obliged to say it. Thanks, Abby. League One next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Because you're a listener of the Totally Football League Show, you can get a third off an Athletic subscription right now. All you need to do is head to theathletic.com/league show. That's theathletic.com/league show.
League One headlines. Three teams on 38 points at the top. They've all played a different amount of games. Sunderland win. They're only 3 points off the automatic places with games in hand on two of the teams above them, but they'll be without injured duo Luke O'Nine and Aidan McGeady for the foreseeable. Pompey are now on a run of 6 wins in a row. Steve Evans refused Cowley's handshake at full-time. The Portsmouth boss said, "Steve is just quite an unreasonable man when he loses." And Shrewsbury are out of the relegation zone. They've taken 4 points off Sunderland and Charlton in their last two games. Now then, Adrian, you've got to handle this with kid gloves, I know, but does three defeats in a row constitute a crisis for Plymouth? They went down 2-1 to a late winner for Wigan on what was an emotional day for them following Charlie White's collapse in training on Thursday. This time last week we were saying, oh, one defeat, it's not the end of the world. All of a sudden it's three defeats. How are you feeling about the team
that
ran off before a ball was kicked?
I don't think you can call anything a crisis when you're still in the promotion shake-up, can you? I mean, it's a setback, not a crisis. A crisis is if you're right at the bottom end of the division and it's all falling apart. So no, I wouldn't give up on them. They were just beaten by the better team. Wigan always score at least 2 goals away from home, don't they? They've done it in every single match, at least 2, since the first game of the season at Sunderland. So they are a tough team to play when you're on home turf. I thought that Ryan Lowe made a big call just before half-time. It happened to me once down at Bournemouth. Alvin Martin hooked me after about 37, 38 minutes. Luke Jeffcott got to 40, I think, when he got hooked for tactical reasons. And Jordan Garrett came on and made the goal straight away for them. So he was decisive from the dugout, but it's not much he can do when the team don't bring their shooting boots. One shot on target, 15 efforts. And they were nullified. I think Wigan played Plymouth well. The back three got their distances right. They didn't give any space for Hardy to make those clever little bursts in behind. And their front two are on fire at the moment for Wigan. So, yeah, no, I think it's one of those. These three games, wipe it. Almost forget about it and just pick yourself up for the next one.
Sam, how do the strikers feel when you get stats like that, where you have loads and loads of efforts and you end up losing the game and not scoring as many goals as you should? I ask that because the same thing happened to Plymouth in midweek against Wickham. They had loads and loads of opportunities but didn't score. At what point do you kind of say, well, we need to do some work in training on finishing, or, you know, you're looking at yourself and do you take that burden of responsibility as the number nine?
Yeah, you worry about yourself. You worry about yourself, to be honest. If you start pointing fingers, this is talking about the rest of the team. You know, it's collective. It's a collective thing. So I wouldn't like to think that you know, they'll be pointing fingers at the strikers, because they've had brilliant seasons, Jeffcott and Hardy, and they've won them a lot of points in the early part.
It's about other people popping up with goals as well. I've been there, and you know that when you're not pulling your weight or when you're not playing well, so you don't need anyone to tell you. In their favour at the moment, they've got Ennis to come back, which gives them a great option at League One level, Niall Ennis, sorry. So he's going to add to the options for Ryan Lowe. I think the other thing is Broome was on the bench the other day. Can he get Broome and Mayer into the same side? I mean, it would be exciting. It would probably be a lot of work for Jordan Houghton at the base of the midfield, but that's something that maybe Ryan Lowe's going to look at, because I think he's so wedded to this system, which has got him great success, particularly at Bury and obviously subsequently at Plymouth. I spoke about maybe him having a look at something else, but I think the personnel changes is the first thing that's going to happen there rather than him tinker with the system. But it's a bit of a concern. But I said going into this weekend, that's just passed. They've had some massive games, and Wigan had the luxury of a little bit of a rest. So they're a powerful side. They're going to be top two, Wigan, I would say.
Would you agree with that, Nancy? And do you think that Sheffield Wednesday fans kind of can cast envious glances toward Wigan, because similar kind of situations for the clubs over the last 2 years off the pitch, and yet Wigan got the rich new owner to come in and not only spend a load of money, but do it in the right way, it would seem.
Yeah, I did a piece on Wigan a bit earlier in the season, and at the time I think Ian Everett had kind of gone for them for signing too many players in the transfer window, or you know, players that apparently Bolton couldn't afford and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, I don't think Wednesday would be jealous of how things played out at Wigan. I don't think any fan wants to go through that. But definitely, I think they're the sort of team where, obviously, they're already up there anyway, but you sort of expect them to be there and finish strong. Whereas I suppose maybe the challenge for a club like Plymouth is hanging around, making sure they don't drop off, because like you've seen with Wednesday at the minute, you know, what looked like a fairly rubbish start to the season, actually now they've put a bit of a run together and they're coming, sort of hitting their stride, and the players are coming back. So I suppose it's about staying in the mix. But yeah, with Wigan, they've got a really exciting manager as well with Liam Richardson. Equally, Ryan Lowe, though, like between those two clubs, two really exciting managers to watch. And yeah, plenty of goals coming from Wigan. They're ones to watch for sure.
Yeah, lots of good gaffers in League One at the moment to keep an eye on. We mentioned Wednesday there, given we've got our favourite footballing ornithologist on, we probably would have chatted about them anyway, but given that they had a 2-2 with Wickham that can be categorised as feisty on and off the pitch, they've made the running order on merit. What's the weather like around Wednesday at the moment then, Nancy? I mean, snowy specifically on Saturday, but metaphorically?
Sunnier than when I last spoke to you. Yeah, I think I said like I wanted to bring happy news. I bring happier news. You know, it's still not joyous, but no. I mean, they were drawing too many games. Now they're 10 unbeaten. So I guess if you can, you know, draw to a point where you then win, and you know Darren Moore doesn't lose his job, then it looks like a good run. Whereas I can't remember which team we said that about in the Championship, but you know if you then lose one, then it looks like a bad run. So they're doing well. Massimo Luongo and Josh Windass both back from injury, which has been massive. I think Windass, I think, has got 2 in 2. The key thing will be keeping Luongo fit, because he's been brilliant every time he's played for Wednesday since he signed from QPR. But it's just getting him on the pitch in the first place, which has been the real issue. And it's a shame that he's, I think it was his 50th game for Wednesday, which in just over 2 seasons sort of probably speaks to his injury problems. But yeah, they've got Josh Windass back, and he'll definitely, you know, take those chances where I think sometimes the players they've got have not quite been able to. But a draw against Wickham. I don't know, Wickham have been a really tough opponent for Wednesday in the last season, and obviously, you know, this was a good game as well, so it's probably a good result all round.
Sam Wickham got their mojo back a little bit in the last couple of weeks, it would seem. Heck of a free kick from Jordan Obita here too.
Yeah, I think so. I think looking back over this game, it seems that the Wednesday supporters leave the happier for the reasons that Nancy's just discussed. It sounds like it was a really energetic display from them, and Wickham had big problems with Wednesday's two wide players and Gareth Ainsworth changed the shape, which was surprising after the Plymouth victory. So I think it was Obita and McCarthy had a tough afternoon up against Hunt and Shadipo. So, and they're a bit patched up in midfield. Dave Wheeler, my old mucker, is playing in central midfield at the moment, which Dave is an incredible athlete and a brilliant team player. So I'm sure it's not too much of a problem, but you'd want someone who's more an orthodox central midfielder, of course. And a really attacking lineup, I noticed as well, again for Wickham, which Gareth Ainsworth's doing, you know, away from home. At Fleetwood recently, played Vokes, Hanlon and Akinfenwa from the off. And this was not the same personnel, but another open-looking Wickham side. So they're playing expansive stuff right now. But yeah, I think a few problems in terms of the setup, but no worries about Wickham, like I don't with, you know, with Wigan, Rotherham. They've got the power, they've got the know-how to be jostling up the top end of the table, and this was another point on the board.
So Adrian, we mentioned three teams on 38 points. Wickham are one of those, but you kind of feel like they're third favourites behind Rotherham and Wigan. Would you say that's right? Do you see them sticking around?
Oh, it's a good question. Wigan are powerful, as Sam said, got real threats all over the pitch. Rotherham are great at both ends, aren't they? They create the most chances and give you the fewest at the other end. So I would put those two ahead of them, but for fixture list fans out there, and I know there are plenty of them, Wickham have faced the top eight away from home already, all of them. So they've got all the easier halves, so apparently easier halves of those ties to come at their place in the second half of the season. So that might count for something. They've only actually won one of these sort of tough away games, and that was at Plymouth recently. So they've had a very hard start to the campaign, and their fixtures do get a bit kinder. So just keep your eye on them. I thought for the equalising goal, obviously it was a sensational free kick from Jordan Obita, but credit the goalkeeper as well. David Stockdale, brilliant volley kick out of his hands to catch the Wednesday defence off guard. And in particular, Callum Patterson, who I've seen already this season play striker, right wing, I think right back. This time he played left side centre back, and he's knocked it over his head. They're scrambling, they commit the foul, and then Wickham score. So yeah, Stockdale deserves a little sort of a nod of approval there, because that was excellent goalkeeping.
Abby, Wickham, promotion, odds-wise, what's the deal?
Well, you said they must be third favourites. Paddy have them down as fourth favourites to be promoted. It's Rotherham who are the favourites, 2-5, then Wigan, 5-6, then Sunderland at evens, which is a bit of a question mark there, I would suggest. And Wickham coming in to be promoted 15-8. So if you listen to what Clarkie's been saying, if you are a fixture list fan, that might be something to keep your eye on. Quite incredibly, I would say, Sheffield Wednesday more likely to be promoted than Plymouth on Paddy Power's odds. Wednesday 4-1, Plymouth 5-1, as are Portsmouth.
Right, we'll go to League 2 next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis Adams.
League 2 headlines. Can anyone catch Forest Green Rovers? They are 6 points clear at the top after their latest victory. Elsewhere, Paul Tisdale signed up to be Stevenage manager. More on that momentarily. Northampton are up to second after they beat Orient. Scunthorpe's slow and steady journey up the hill continues. They've now drawn 3 of their last 4. And you know that cliche about the roof coming off the stadium? Well, it literally happened at Tranmere, so they had to call off their game with Stevenage. It's a club with which you have an association, Adrian. Initially, well, you put on the group chat, oh, they've done well to get him. And then I thought, yeah, kind of. But his last couple of jobs have been a total bust. So maybe he's done well to get them too.
I don't know. I think, yeah, in his current situation, he just needs to get back in the game, doesn't he, Paul Tisdale? If he wants to have those aspirations to climb the ladder as a gaffer again, he just needed to get in. And I don't think it's the worst job in the world. Stevenage are ambitious. They're not the biggest club in the country by any stretch of the imagination. They're not super rich. But the chairman there does, you know, push the boat out as much as he can. And he will back his managers. And I think they've got some half-decent players there. Obviously, Elliot List has scored 8 goals. He's the star man, really. But it's not the worst squad in the division to have to work with. And over the years, obviously, Sam knows this better than anyone else on this podcast. He's got a good record, hasn't he, of bringing through young players, developing teams on a fairly limited budget. Great success with Exeter. Got promoted with MK Dons, remember? That wasn't that long ago. And the Bristol Rovers thing, he was only there 5 minutes. So I don't think that we can hammer him for that. I think he was shipped out very, very quickly. So, no, I still think that he is a very good manager and that he can improve that team. This sounded too harsh on Alex Revelle, who was the man in charge. I mean, Paul Tisdale's CV tells you that he should be a considerable upgrade.
Sam, you've played under him. What's the first day going to be like for those Stevenage players under him this Monday as we record? Will it be teacups getting chucked or egos getting stroked?
Apart from Jake Taylor and Jamie Reid, who I think Jake Taylor played for him, but certainly Jamie Reid, it'll probably be the most interesting day of all their careers in terms of what a manager serves up, because it was very unique for me at the end of my career. I'd never met a manager like Paul Tisdale, to be honest. He's not to everyone's taste, but it's different. You know, he's very, very detailed in what he does. There'd be different methods maybe in terms of what they've met in their careers so far. I agree with Clarkey. I think League Two is record stands up incredibly well, promoted with Exeter and MK Dons. I think it's the next challenge, League One, where there's always been question marks latterly about him. But if this was a Stevenage that was going to play, you know, different, more exciting football this season, Paul Tisdale will try and play winning football. He looks at every individual game on its own merits, how his team can get joy. And if that means booming it from the fullback to a centre forward, he'll do that on occasions. If it means playing out through midfield, then they'll do that at times as well. So I can't give you a definitive style. What he is a very detailed, forward-thinking manager who looks at the data and picks his team accordingly. So it would have been an interesting first day. They'll probably all be going home, going, God, this guy's a bit different. My first day at Exeter, he asked me firstly if I played cricket, because they were playing against one of the... That was the first thing he said to me. Because they were playing a local village team in the pre-season. And then I think I said no sheepishly. Then they asked me if I played golf, because there was a golf day coming up around the corner as well. So we didn't discuss my assets as a footballer until well into the hour. But
Can you play golf?
I can play golf now. At that point, I couldn't.
Disappointed him twice.
I disappointed him twice. And then horrified him when he saw that I was no good at football anymore either. So it wasn't a match made in heaven. Although we shared a few nice meals out. We used to go to Strada and use our 50% off in Exeter.
Just you and Paul?
Matt Oakley was the link. Matt Oakley, who was obviously Tiz's mate towards the end. So it was quite unique. It was quite interesting for me.
Did you not feel on edge in case one of the other lads spotted you?
Manager's son.
I wasn't manager's son because I played about 3 games, Matt. So it got a little bit uncomfortable after the 30th Saturday where I'd sat on the bench and I was still sharing that one wonderful pesto pomodoro bread with him on a Friday afternoon.
There's the title of the pod, Abby. Wonderful pesto pomodoro bread. Nancy, you ought to be able to keep them up, Andy. I mean, they're on 18 points. They're only 3 above the relegation zone, but you've got the car crash that is Oldham and Scunthorpe, who've won twice out of 19 games. So he should be able to get them over the line, you'd think.
Yeah, and it feels like that's the way, isn't it, in League Two? It's normally some sort of disaster club at the bottom, which is typically how bad you have to be to drop out of the league, really. And I was speaking to a few National League chairmen for something else a couple of weeks ago, and they were saying, like, it's one thing to get out of the National League, but actually, you know, they quite fancy themselves to stay up. Obviously, there's that old record of no one ever going straight back down. But, you know, it kind of being more of a concern for a lot of clubs at the latter end of League Two in terms of whether they'd actually then ever get back to the national, back to the EFL. So, but yeah. I mean, look, someone said it there about like winning football. As long as the results come, fans will be happy with that, won't they? So, winning football is always a winning recipe. as long as the results follow the style, I suppose.
Well, speaking of winning football, Forest Green Rovers beat Bristol Rovers 2-0 on Saturday. Wasn't aware that this was a derby. Apparently it is. Jamil Matt got the brace. They finished with 10 men, but it didn't matter. Sam, you're shaking your head at the concept of that being a derby? Because you're not shaking your head at the mention of Jamil Matt. I know that. He's one of your boys.
Jamil, I love him. It's not a derby. And the reason it's not a derby is because everyone was saying that Forest Green Rovers against Swindon Town was a derby recently when I was at that game. That's not a derby. It's not a rivalry. It's nothing. It's just down the road. Bristol's further, surely, isn't it? So that's not a derby.
49 minutes if you get the traffic right.
Is it? Mm. It's 49 minutes to the bottom of that hill, and then it's another half an hour to get up to the top, to the car park. But I love going to Forest Green, and they are brilliant at the moment. And Jamil Matt, I think that's 17 goal contributions for him. Clarkie asked me who I'd have over him and Harry Smith on last week's podcast, and Jamil Matt has given us the answer there. But I felt, just looking at the team, to get Ebu Adams and Aitchison in the same side, they've been kind of the two number 10s, if you like, but Ebu Adams played a bit deeper in this game. And I think he's their most important player along with Matt, and that gives them even more firepower if that's possible. And they're going brilliantly. Two really convincing home victories. And with Kane Wilson not playing, it looked like Caddam really stepped up in this game. I think he put 11 of their 15 crosses in. So he really stepped up and still supplied that amazing quality from the wide areas that they have.
Clarkie, I'm just looking at the league table as a layman that I am. I'm seeing that they've scored more goals than everybody else, and their goal difference is 10 better than the teams below them. So that's a vital cog in the wheel of their success so far, isn't it? Basically, if you score goals, you're going to win games.
They're a very strong team, and they don't need a lot of the ball to hurt you. As this match proves, I think they had 43% of possession, but were never out of control of the game. Where they're so good, because they're statistically the best pressing team in League One, Forest Green. So they don't mind other teams having it, because they're so good at winning it back that they find space from those turnovers, and that's where they can punish the opposition. There's loads to like about Forest Green Rovers this season under Rob Edwards, and yeah, a little bit like Wigan. I find it hard to see them outside of the automatic promotion places this time around. Can I just say, I really enjoyed the last goal. It was a penalty, but there were three things in the build-up that just tickled me. Huge wind-assisted goal kick from McGee. I think any kind of wind-affected football is slightly funny, and it ballooned over everybody and got them scrambling. As he went back, the Bristol player, Robbie Gotts, pulled his hammy mid-sprint, leaving the Forest Green player to basically say, oh, okay, I'm just going to skip around you now. And then, of course, the handball on the edge of the box was a block just outside the area. And again, that's slightly funny if you don't like Joey Barton. So for three reasons, that last goal amused me.
You probably couldn't get two more polar opposite clubs, Forest Green Rovers and Stoke City, yet Forest Green Rovers must be the most weather-affected ground in the country, like the Britannia. It has to be, doesn't it? Top of the hill. It's always snowing, driving rain. It's mad. But it'd be interesting if they're playing on a more, I don't know, flatter landscape when they move grounds. Surely that would be key.
Time will tell with that one. They're a fascinating club, aren't they, Nancy, Forest Green? Because you think if they do go up this season, it looks as though there's a good chance. What's their level? What's the limit that they can reach? Because obviously not a massively well-supported club, but they're running in a really interesting way, and they've got an owner who's got deep pockets. So you kind of feel like maybe League One
wouldn't be the limit for them. Maybe it would take a while to get up to being a championship side, but if the likes of Wickham can do it over a long period, there's no reason why they can't eventually kind of rub shoulders in tier two, maybe.
Absolutely, yeah. Forest Green are my team on FIFA, actually, and I've just got them promoted to the championship. So,
well, there you go.
but no, look, I love them. I think they're a brilliant club, and absolutely agree that that is not a derby, because I'm from Wiltshire originally, so I feel like I can definitely, you know, sort of my end, I can claim that as not being a derby. But yeah, no, they're super interesting. I mean, they've got really interesting stuff going on with the academy and kind of the players that they're able to pick up. That have like dropped out of maybe Southampton or Cardiff, Swansea, like all around that area. You know, it's a bit of a hotbed in terms of being able to attract that type of young player. And obviously they have historically been getting a chance playing for Forest Green. So yeah, I don't see why they couldn't get to the championship, especially like you say, with the owner, new stadium coming. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on there, and yeah, ones to watch.
Yeah, Burton did it. Yeovil did it. I wouldn't say that they're much bigger than Forest Green Rovers. And a sort of a follow-up, I just can't get my head around. Nancy, how do you got time to play Football Manager? I mean, you work for The Athletic. You've got to be out there getting stories every single day. I mean, I just don't know how you manage that.
I was off 3 days last week with a horrendous cold. So that was it. Hadn't touched it for about 6 months before. But yeah. Yeah, I'd left it halfway through League One and then got it sorted, got it over the line.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I am contractually obliged at this point to point out that The Athletic do have a podcast all about Football Manager, a young upstart called Ian McIntosh. Never heard of him. He hosts that. So check it out on all the usual podcast platforms if you so desire. Sam, you're looking down at your notes in a way that I think indicates to me that, like me, you have either no interest or no ability to play Football Manager.
Oh, Louise bought it for me when we just had the first baby. And I think I got QPR to the fringes of the playoffs and lost interest. So
I did the same after Chapman 97-98.
I used to.
Back at Yoko, I'm not interested.
I had in the back garden where I grew up, though, we had the gate was forever open because my best mate lived next door, and I just used to creep into his house onto like the one computer, the family computer, and just play for hours on end when the mum and dad were probably in the house pottering about, and I was just up there just signing. Neil Lamptey, I think, was the guy at the time. Coventry fans.
Yeah, I always got Neil Cox. He was the only player who'd come to Forest in the budget that I had, and then we get relegated. Anyway, we digress. Abby, can you give us some odds on League Two and on actual football rather than pretend football?
I think your audition to go on Ian's show has gone very well, though. top three finish. Forest Green, you can still bet on them to finish in the top three. They're 1-7, though. Then Exeter are the second favourites at 21-10. Northampton, fifth favourites, despite being second in the table. They're 5-2. And Sam's beloved Swindon, third favourites to finish in the top three, 11-5.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Right, we're just about done for today. Before we go, in honour of the replay between Exeter and Bradford in the FA Cup happening this week, I wondered, which team did you feel like you were always coming up against in your playing / supporting days? Nancy, I'm not sure if you want to out yourself as a fan of one particular team, but we know that you're Wiltshire-based. Was there somebody from round that way who you always found your side coming up against?
I'm happy to out myself. I feel like I have in the past. Southampton are my team, so... I don't know. I feel like perpetually we're playing Liverpool every week and getting stuff 4-0, but maybe that's just my, you know, short memory. but yeah, other than that, I mean, the game that just sticks in my head as happening every week is Forest against West Brom on a Friday night. That is the Friday night kickoff, isn't it?
Yeah, what a stinky boring game that was as well. It used to be for Forest Spurs, but that was like 20 years ago, and now it's Walsall or somebody like that, and we always lose against Walsall. So that's pretty depressing. Sam, did you have a team that you always played against and felt like you'd played them last week?
Yeah, in the first few years, it was Peterborough United. I don't know, just I had loads of loan moves and always seemed to start
with a trip to London Road, which is wonderfully old-fashioned. I hope it still is. It was brilliant playing out, and I always scored as well, and it was close enough for some friends to come up from London, so I got real happy memories going there. And Abby will know this, I've recently been watching Big Ron Manager on YouTube because we've got another baby, so I'm up in the middle of the night again. And if you haven't seen it, I urge you to go and watch it on YouTube because it's the best television ever. It's incredible. And I think it was probably just after these years I'm talking about. So a lot of the players I played against, and they used to sign a lot of lads from London clubs, Jimmy Bullard, Adam Newton. So I don't know, I knew a lot of the players, and seeing them in this reality show with Big Ron, it is majestic. Go and watch it.
Who do you think regrets being part of a football documentary more, John Sitton or Steve Bleasdale?
Do you know what? It's got to be John Sitton, because John Sitton, I don't know, he seems like a really bright fella when I've heard him speak. And obviously he's had that and it's just gone horrifically wrong. Steve Bleasdale, I quite like him in the show. He loses the plot towards the end, but wouldn't you, with Big Ron coming in his sheepskin jacket, like chucking in drivel when he's trying to like take this opportunity? I felt really sorry for him, Steve Bleasdale. And Abby's done a bit of digging and he's got a nice little wedding photography business now, hasn't he? So, you know, joke's on Ron.
Some time back, we were talking about teams that you always used to play against. Clarky, did you have one?
not really, if I'm being honest. Yeah, in the lower league of the FA Cup, I ended up playing Greys a few times and then in the knockout stages, but that's boring. It was Arsenal. When I was part of the youth team / reserves, it was the season 92-93. Arsenal played Sheffield Wednesday four times in a month. You've got to be a certain age to remember this.
Both cup finals that year, was it?
Yeah, they won the League Cup final 2-1. They lost 1-0 at Hillsborough, playing pretty much a reserve team that I just missed out on because of the FA Cup final was coming up. Then they drew 1-1 in the FA Cup final, horrendous match. And then they won 2-1 in the FA Cup final replay in an equally horrendous match. So four times in a month, and I'd say only about half an hour of the combined total of minutes was enjoyable. But Arsenal ended up winning two trophies, so it was fine.
Yeah, it could have been worse. You could have been Steve Morrow, I suppose. He didn't enjoy it very much, I seem to recall.
Abby, all the best editing the last 10 minutes of this podcast. Many thanks to Adrian, to Sam and to Nancy for joining us today. We'll be back on Thursday looking ahead to the big games in the weekend. I dare say that Fulham versus Bournemouth will feature in that. Many thanks for joining us, though, for today's show. We'll speak to you again later in the week. Until then, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and keep up to date with everything Totally by heading to @TheTotallyShow on Twitter and on Insta. Find out the latest subscription offers by going to theathletic.com/league show. The Totally Football League Show is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.